Welcome back to the Grey Lodge. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt. Today we're going to talk about Season 3 of Twin Peaks. That's right, we're continuing our Grey Lodge journey into the world of Twin Peaks, and we're bringing it home now. Finally, Season 3, where all the mysteries will be revealed. And today we're going to cover Season 3, Episode 1 and Episode 2. Why? Because that's how they were released on Showtime originally. Back in, 2017? Now, if you're new to this whole thing, I started this journey. How many shows are we on? I don't even know. And I did a Twin Peaks primer episode where I went through the whole cast and crew of Twin Peaks. Now, for Season 3, the cast and crew is obviously very different. And I'm not going to go through it like I did for the primer. A lot of the original Twin Peaks cast comes back. Some of them don't. Some of them have passed on. But they brought on, and I'm not exaggerating, hundreds of actors. There's so many characters in Season 3, it's insane. The cast is massive. And, you know, and Season 3 is very different from Season 1 and 2. I have mixed feelings about it. You are definitely going to have feelings about it. Because this whole season is directed by David Lynch, which makes for a very different experience. Some people hate that. You know, myself, surprisingly, I'm not a massive David Lynch fan. Some of his movies are fine. They're kind of weird and they're out there. And I don't hate them by any means, but Twin Peaks is different. Twin Peaks does something different. And I think that's because you've got Mark Frost as part of the creative process, which brings it down to earth a little bit more. I don't know. I just know that Season 3 is definitely very different of an experience than Season 1 and 2, but it's going to be worth it. You're going to have highs, you're going to have lows. It starts off really high, kind of you're wondering where the story's going, you're like, what is happening? And then halfway through, it picks up again, and then it drops again. And then at the end, it's like a mad sprint. And I'm going to walk through it with you guys. And what I really love about Season 3 is the age gap. It's been 25 years. You know, it's a long time. You go from watching these Season 1 and 2 filmed in, you know, 1989 and 88 and 1990, and these actors are much older. You know, they were used to seeing them. They were young and beautiful, and now they're old and beautiful still, you know? It's just different, and it's kind of an experience you get as you get older. I don't obviously know the age of the listener, but me being in my 40s, there's something strange. It's like a high school reunion. You know, I've never been to one because I've mixed feelings about what that would feel like. It's got to be mind-blowing, right? And that's what it feels like this Twin Peaks Season 3 is, especially for a person like me that only recently found Twin Peaks and watched Season 1 and 2 just, you know, a couple years ago. I didn't have to wait 25 years. Anyhow, it's considered an 18-hour movie, all right, is what this is. Lynch apparently was only supposed to film 9 episodes, and he insisted on doing 18, and they're like, all right, bet, do it. So shout out to Showtime for making this thing happen. So without further ado, I want to get into this. Season 3, Episode 1, My Log Has a Message for You. And this first episode of Season 3 of Twin Peaks, it's called Twin Peaks The Return, not Season 3, I get it. But Twin Peaks The Return is, it's an amazing episode. We're going to look for hidden symbolism of nuclear explosions in the new revamped opening credits, the fireman's coded language about what this whole season is about, because they tell you straight up front, an entity called the experiment, mystery sounds coming from a phonograph, Saturn symbolism, and so much more. So, and first I want to note that this is episode 31 of the series. So for people, there's numbering conventions in the world of Twin Peaks. Some people say that the pilot is episode 1, and then they just continue it. Meaning that by the time you get to Season 3, Episode 1, you're now on Episode 31. And let's point out the curiosity here that we're at Episode 31, which is Season 3, Episode 1. The 3 and the 1 are very interesting. And then, you know, Season 2, I don't like that numbering convention. I prefer, you know, Season 2, Episode 5 or whatever. So it was interesting because Season 2 ended at Episode 22, 222. anyway, the numbering is very interesting, and a lot of, and what I don't get is that people that are these Twin Peaks purists are like, no, it's episode 31. And it's like, well, I mean, if you consider that this is supposed to be one movie, shouldn't episode 31 be all 18 parts? Because it's called Twin Peaks The Return, part 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, you know? So if you want to get technical about it. So anyway, we start out. And I can't imagine what it must have felt like for people waiting all these years and getting what they wanted. It starts out immediately off Bangerville, right off the out the gate, and it's replaying the original season one Cooper Dream with Laura talking to Dale Cooper in the red room in the waiting room, how she's going to see him in 25 years.
Hello, I stand for. I'll see you again in 25 years. Meanwhile.
Now, after they do this, they go through some, I mean, this is very wild. They go through these foggy shots of Twin Peaks and the old sawmill, which is just falling apart and decrepit, the high school, the pilot episode of the girl screaming in the courtyard when the school found out about Laura's death. And then it zooms in on the homecoming photo of Laura Palmer still in the trophy case. And they cue the credits and Julie Cruz. And it's almost like we're witnessing the death of Twin Peaks in a way. It's, you know, like I said, it's like going back to revisit your hometown or your high school. It's the energy is completely different. What you remember it and your experience of that reality is completely gone. It's just gone. And the opening credits, even when if you watch it, the and I don't know if you're watching or because I'm going to post this on my tier two supporters feed, this the video version of this podcast. If you're watching the video, you saw how when it zooms in on Laura Palmer's homecoming image, homecoming queen photo, it said Twin Peaks in script right across her eyeballs, right across her eyes. Like, I don't know. It's like it's preparing you for some whole other business. Like, what you thought you were going to get all this stuff, you're not quite getting that. And I don't know. I mean, people must have been geeking out. I couldn't even, you know, when I interviewed Scott Ryan, I wanted to say he wasn't a big fan of season three. Because I think big fans were watching season one and two on repeat, you know? Like Spring Breakers, James Franco, Scarface on repeat. And when we went into season three, it might have been too much for some people. But anyway, in the credits, because if you remember in the season one credits on the pilot episode, I think I talked about this, I mentioned how on the opening credits there's fade cuts between shots for the credits, right? And I talked about how the bird and the smokestack in the pilot episode credits looked like a kind of like a nuclear explosion going on there, right? And you can kind of see that in the credits for season 3 with the waterfalls that turn into the red curtains. You can see an explosion. I'll put the image up on the Instagram. You can check it out. Again, with the nuclear explosion buried in there. So then the show starts after the credits, and we're now, it's black and white. We're in this room with the giant who fans now refer to as the Fireman. And look, I don't know if you know this. I'm new on this journey to Twin Peaks. So this is only the third time I'm watching season 3. I saw season 1 and 2 a bunch of times. And this, I've been waiting. I didn't watch season 3 for a long time on purpose. So I'm revisiting this with you. I don't actually know why they call him the Fireman. I'm sure there's a reason. It's the giant, but they call him the Fireman. And he's talking to Cooper in this black and white room. And he's telling Cooper to listen to the sounds. And there's a phonograph. And you'll hear this scratchy, sort of subdued phonograph repeating this sound, which must be important. And then he tells Cooper a bunch of information that seems nonsensical, like most of Twin Peaks, but it's actually very integral to the story of where this is all going. Take a listen.
Agent Cooper. Listen to the sounds. Is this in Arasna?
It is.
It all cannot be said aloud now. Remember. 430. Richard and Linda. Two bars worth on stone.
I understand.
You are far away.
So what is this location we're at right now? Is this the White Lodge? Did the waiting room turn into something different over those 25 years? Because Cooper looks 25 years older in this at this point. So does the giant. The giant's still speaking in reverse, implying that we're in the lodge. But the giant, or the fireman, says, "It is in our house now. It all cannot be said aloud now. Remember 430, Richard and Linda, two birds, one stone." Huh. What does 430 mean? I don't know. It adds up to 7. Who's Richard and Linda? Why does Cooper understand? He says he understands. And it won't really mean anything to us until we get to the finale, unfortunately. So you got a long ways to go. So Cooper dissolves, and you hear some electric static. And also know that Cooper never spoke backwards. It was only the giant. and the giants seem to be a force of good in season 1 and 2, but I want to talk about the sounds for a minute, okay? So that scratching sound on the phonograph seems important, right? It actually appears later in the episode, or maybe it's episode 2, but I looked on Reddit, and someone out there thinks that it could be the sound of Laura opening her diary, and I'm going to play a clip of the... First, I'm going to replay the phonograph clip, and then after that, I'm going to play the clip from The Fire Walk With Me, The Missing Pieces. I know, these people that get into Twin Peaks, I'm telling you, you could spend the rest of your life trying to debunk all of the mysteries here. But there's multiple theories on all of this, but I'm going to play the phonograph that we just heard from the giant or the fireman, whatever you want to call him. And then after that, from Laura Palmer opening her secret diary in Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, The Missing Pieces. It does sound very identical, okay? Now, what role does that play? I'll be damned if I know. We're going to find out eventually. We're going to try to find out, I should say. So now we're out of this Mysteryville. Now we're back in the woods of Twin Peaks. Oh, thank goodness. We're back in Twin Peaks. This is great. Dr. Jacoby apparently went full OG granola woke. He's living in a van down by the river. At first, I thought maybe this was Ben Horn's Ghostwood development he was campaigning so hard for, but I don't know. He's just Dr. Jacoby living in a van down by the river. A man delivers a box full of shovels for him. What the hell's he doing with shovels? We don't know. Then we cut to New York City. And this is where things might have made it a sharp left for folks who wanted one version of Twin Peaks and got another. You hear lots of whooshing sounds like we were shown in Twin Peaks in the first two seasons. And I believe that is implying that there's Black Lodge activity happening in New York City. That's what that whooshing sound is. A lot of people say to listen to season 3 with headphones on. I actually did that for these first two episodes. I'm going to see if I can keep doing it. But we're in New York City. We're in a top of a, you know, skyscraper, and there's a man staring at a glass cube that's built onto the side of a wall with a whole lot of technology and cameras recording it. And there's this circular duct that goes from the outside of the building into this glass cube. Very strange, right? Then a woman named Tracy, she wants to come visit this guy who's sitting in this room, but she's not allowed to. There's a security guard out front. And the man who's watching, the observer, who's watching the cube, comes out, and he says that she can't come in because it's top secret. And oh, by the way, UFC fighter Michael Bisping is the security guard, by the way. And the man, the observer man, he's mad weird. Like, the way he talks to Tracy is really strange. For instance, he punches in the code to get back in after Tracy gives him his coffee that she's there to provide for him, I guess. He's punching in the door code, and Tracy's trying to, like, sneak a little peek in. And he looks back at her. He says, "You're a bad girl, Tracy." Like, dude's just mad weird. I don't know what his deal is. But what's interesting is that in season 1 and 2, every time we went to the Red Room, Cooper was sitting next to a model of Saturn. And Saturn played such a huge role with the conjunction of Jupiter as the opening for the Black Lodge. Well, wouldn't you know, a cube is the symbol for Saturn. So here we are again with more symbolism of Saturn, which I think in this scene, it's telling us this is very much Black Lodge activity. All right. Saturn is the building block of reality. It's the planetary force, the adversarial force, the Luciferian force. We talked about that ad nauseum at this point for this show. So then we go back to Twin Peaks. Oh, thank God, we're back in Twin Peaks. That's all we wanted. We've been waiting 25 years, David. Give us the Twin Peaks. So now we're back at the Great Northern. Love this. Here we go. Ben Horn. Yes, Ben Horn's working. Yes, we love it. And he's talking to Beverly. It's his new assistant, played by Ashley Judd. And here comes Jerry. Oh, thank goodness, Jerry's here too. Jerry Horn. Eating smoked whistle pig or whatever he was doing. Or cheese pigs or whatever it was. He shows up and he's got a new obsession. He's in the cannabis business. And Ben appears to still be, you know, good guy Ben. Thank God, we thought maybe he died at the end of season two. Remember that? When Dr. Hayward, you know, punched him in the head or pushed him in front of the fireplace or whatever. We thought maybe he was dead. But seems like Ben is still on the good side from season two. Because Jerry, you know, he asked if he's banging the new assistant, Beverly, yet. And Ben's like, no, I wouldn't do that. Besides, she's married. So I don't know. I think he's a good guy still. We don't know. And Jerry's got a big bushy white beard. Look, I mean, he also went full OG granola woke, you know, living in the van down by the river. Then we go over to the Twin Peaks Sheriff's Department. Lucy's still there. Oh, we love it. We love it. And we find out Sheriff Truman is sick, so his brother, the other Sheriff Truman, that's Frank Truman, is running the show. And I think behind the scenes what happened was Michael Ontkean, who played Sheriff Truman, he quit acting, from what I understand. So he didn't come back for season three, which, real bummer. Now we get an abrupt change in scenery. It's nighttime, there's some hella creepy music playing, and we're introduced to a guy that they call Mr. C, or Cooper. And this is basically Dale Cooper, but long hair and metal AF. And it's obviously Evil Cooper. This is obviously the Evil Cooper that came out of Glastonbury Grove 25 years ago. He's been walking around Earth while the good Cooper's stuck in the lodge. So Mr. C pulls up to this house. He's driving a Mercedes. He's wearing all black. He's hanging out with a bunch of misfits. He's looking for Ray and Daria. He's knocking bitches out. And he asks for Ray and Daria. They come out and they hand this. There's a guy sitting in a wheelchair. They hand him, I don't know, like an index card. It's very strange. And also, I got to note, Ray is one of the beloved characters of the show. You may not know it yet. In fact, my first time watching season three, I hated season three. I hated it. I know, it's probably hard to believe. In fact, I hit up Team Double R, my two advisors, and I said, do I really need to finish season three? Because I hate this. And the first two episodes I was cool with. It was when we got to episodes like 3, 4, and 5, I said, bro, this is stupid. And they said, no, you got to make it to episode 8. And then you got to finish it. And I said, okay. And on the strength of their word, I kept going. And I certainly don't regret it. I would have been real sad if I would have quit. I know I talked to a lot of people. A lot of people quit. A lot of people quit. I couldn't believe it. But you're going to love Ray. He's actually a hilarious character. Then we go back to New York City. Tracy's she's back with the coffees. You know, and of course, coffee is a recurring theme. David Lynch loves coffee. I love coffee. Who doesn't love coffee? But Michael Bisping, where's he at? He must be doing a UFC fight because he's not standing guard. So the guy in the room, he sneaks Tracy into this top secret cube room and he's showing her around. She talks him into letting her in. She's like, look, I got two lattes here for you. Let me in the room. And the dude, he fails the coffee test. Right? Remember we talked about Cooper in the Red Room in the season two finale? How I said there was a coffee test and he failed. He identified with the ego. He didn't cross the abyss. Because the coffee's irresistible in the world of Twin Peaks. Well, he tells Tracy, he gets Tracy in the room. He tells her, look, I get paid to just sit here and watch to see if anything manifests in that box. And she's like, what? And he's like, yeah. And he says, I'm hired to do this. Some anonymous billionaire is paying me to do it. I just sit here. And of course, so they start sitting there and of course they start making out. They start taking their clothes off, which is a death curse in all horror movies. And I'm also wondering what the strategy was here. Were you going to really drink coffee and then make sexy time? Aren't you worried about having to go boom booms? Did the coffee make you go boom boom sometime? But anyway, they start making the love. And then it happens. Then sheer terror and horror. The cube goes black. And the man, he taps Tracy. He's like, stop, stop. You know, they're freaking out. This creepy entity manifests into the cube. And it kind of looks like a gray alien in a way. And I'll put the image on the Instagram. You can see what I'm talking about. The entity is referred to as, quote, what they call the experiment. All right. It's described as a pale entity with a feminine body, a gaping mouth, two small horns, and reversed thumbs. And we might learn more about this later on in the season, okay? I don't want to go too deep into this right now. But what I want to point out is that energy from this sexual act, sex acts is important in the occult. Sexual magic, tantra, is believed to be how the universe is created, the locking polarity of Shiva and Shakti. The sexual acts seem to trigger the appearance of this entity into the glass cube. And this cube, of course, turns black, which is the symbol of Saturn, a black cube. And this, you know, this gray alien-looking humanoid breaks through the glass and tears these two up into shreds and kills them. Like every horror movie informs you, the sex triggers the spirits and the entities and the evil. Now we're off to Buckhorn, South Dakota. And again, first time I watched this, I said, what the hell are we doing here? I don't care about South Dakota. I don't care about New York City. I just want to go to Twin Peaks. Why are we going to these other places? Nonetheless, we're off to Buckhorn, South Dakota. The police are investigating a smell coming from Ruth Davenport's apartment. Bad smells are never a good thing either. Her neighbor, Marjorie Green, not to be confused with Marjorie Green Taylor, Marjorie Green shows up. She's got a Mexican Chihuahua named Armstrong. But her neighbor and her Chihuahua, they sense something wrong. They call 911. Boom. Police car pulls up. And I'll put the image on the Instagram. It's the car number is 116, which is an inversion of 911. Surely done on purpose. The inversion, the reverse talk, the reverse language, it's all there. The Crowley law of reversals. So these police, they get into the apartment. When they get in there, you can see there's a duck on top of her bookshelf. Again, a reference to season 1 and 2. There's tons of references to season 1 and 2. If you want to look for them, they're all there. There's the duck, like you saw in the pilot episode, with the twin duality of the two ducks. And in Cooper's Room of the Great Northern, we saw the two ducks on the wall. So anyway, they find Ruth Davenport. She's in bed, but she's dead. Her left eye is blown out. And the symbolism of the all-seeing eye is a recurring theme. We talked about it a bunch already. And, you know, we talked about in the Secret History of Twin Peaks book, Dr. Jacoby's theories about the left eye being attached to the right brain, which is the, intuition. But anyways, they pull the sheets back. It turns out it's actually Ruth Davenport's head laying on top of a male torso. So there's two dead bodies, kind of, in a way here. So now we're back to Twin Peaks, thank God. And the log lady calls Hawk. Hawk's out in the woods, okay? No, I'm sorry, wrong part. The log lady calls Hawk, tells him that the log has a message for him. She says something's missing, and he's got to find it. And it's got something to do with Dale Cooper and Laura Palmer, and the way he'll find it has to do something with his heritage. So Hawk starts rifling through the boxes from the Laura Palmer case in 1989. Here comes Andy and Lucy. Oh, thank goodness. Andy and Hawk still there. So is Lucy. Lucy said, she says that Cooper's missing, which she says Cooper's missing and he hasn't been heard from since before Wally was born. Their son's name is Wally Brando. So Andy and Lucy have a son named Wally. Okay, you'll meet him like once in this season 3, which made me think of Waldo. I was like, did they do that on purpose? Name it after Waldo the bird? But it's interesting because Lucy says Cooper is missing. Well, I don't know if that makes sense because at the end of season 2, Cooper came out. Of course, it was evil Cooper. We know that. Does Lucy know that? I don't know. I thought that was a very strange thing to say. And also, I want to point out how tragically sad it was that the log lady, she actually recorded these. I think I talked about this already on the primer intro. But Catherine Coulson, who plays Margaret Lanterman, a.k.a. the log lady, she actually died from cancer, right? She didn't even see the airing of the series. She recorded her part just days before she died. David Lynch, from what I understand, directed through Zoom because, you know, he was obviously filming the show and wanted to get her on, and she was game for it. So, you know, terribly tragic story. But, you know, so anyway, so where are we now? So she tells Hawk he needs to get into this thing, right? Because she's kind of like the prophet for a lot of this stuff in terms of how the story goes. Because you remember Fire Walk With Me, she gave Laura a sort of vibe. And she kind of knows there's bigger things in motion here. So Hawk starts rifling through the boxes. Oh, yeah. Okay, so yeah, we already know Hawk, Andy, Lucy, they start rifling through the boxes. And then we go back to Buckhorn, South Dakota. And the police, they get a local hit on the fingerprints at Ruth's apartment. It's this guy, he's the principal of the local school named William Hastings. He's the local principal. They don't know who the male torso is, but they know Ruth Davenport's head and whatever. So they pull William Hastings in for questioning, even though the Morgans were coming over for dinner. That's what his wife says. And he says that he only knows Ruth as the librarian. He doesn't really know who she is. But, you know, the cops are like, bro, your fingerprints are all over her apartment. You guys were stupid or something. But he denies. He's like, I've never even been there. So the cops are like, are you sure about that, buddy? And William Hastings knows something's up. So he lawyers up real quick. Good call, buddy. You've already talked too much. So, but he lawyers up. And then the cops get a search warrant, and they locate a piece of flesh in William's trunk. And it's interesting because the detective, he's looking, and he's got a flashlight that's kind of strobing, and he says it's broken, you know. And this is a parallel to the pilot with the flashing light in the morgue. Remember when Cooper was investigating the body of Laura Palmer and the autopsy doctor, the morgue doctor is like, sorry, the light's broken. And you could say, well, this is just a callback to season one. Or you could say it's electricity acting up because there's forces being waking up on the earth. Then it wraps up and it's the giant, the fireman. He's chilling in that black and white room with the phonograph. The credits roll and we hear that scratching noise from the phonograph. So that's the whole season 3, episode 1. In conclusion, are we thrilled or are we let down? If you waited 25 years, you may be asking, where the hell's the coffee and the cherry pie? Where's the double R diner? Why are we in South Dakota? Where are all these people? I've been missing and wanting all these characters for 25 years, and you're taking me to South Dakota and New York City? You know, because that was kind of my vibe with it. There was a tons of ups and downs with this season. But like the rest of Twin Peaks, you don't always get what you want. You don't always get what you want. Sometimes you get what you need. And what we need is to understand the occult messaging of what's going on with this whole story. And I'm going to try to shed some light on it. I certainly won't be solving all the mysteries of Twin Peaks. I'm going to leave a lot of that on the plate for you guys to dig deeper into. Trust me, there's a million posts, articles, theories, and videos out there. I actually can't wait to go through my analysis of it so I can dig into some of this stuff. But I'm definitely going to talk about the occult aspects that I believe many people are overlooking, which blows my mind because honestly, that's what this whole story is about. And from there, we go to season 3, episode 2, right? Back to back, just like Showtime released them, I'm doing it for you too. It's episode 32 in the whole thing, season 3, episode 2. The stars turn and a time presents itself. William Hastings, he's in prison still, right? The jail, I should say. And his wife visits and he swears. He's like, I swear I wasn't there, but listen, I had a dream that I was in Ruth's apartment. But she's not having it. She's like, bro, you're tripping. And she's like, you had an affair. And but William's like, yeah, well, guess what, Trick? I know you've been sleeping with our lawyer, George, which she later confirms. But she's cold-blooded, though. She threatens him. She's like, oh, you're about to spend your whole life in prison, fool. And I'm like, bro, what's up with this couple? But it is interesting because he basically said he had a dream and that manifested in reality, which, as you know from season one of and two of Twin Peaks, that's what it's all about. So then we get this shot where the camera pans through the jail and you get a shot of this figure that's all black that dissipates into air. Very strange. And I believe this is what you'll learn later more about the woodsman. And if you recall in Fire Walk With Me, the room above the convenience store, there was a guy who looked like a woodsman. Well, here we go. That's our first shot at it. He's all black, which we know that's a reference to the Black Lodge and the burning scorched oil smell and all that. So now we're back to Mr. C, Evil Cooper. He's hiding out at Phyllis and William Hastings' home. And Phyllis gets home from presumably visiting William in jail. And he says to her, he says, you did good. You followed human nature perfectly. And then he shoots her in the eye with George's gun. Again, another shot in the eye, the all-seeing eye, from the occult master himself, Mr. C. And he confirms to us that he is not human because he says, you follow human nature perfectly. Then we go to Las Vegas. Oh my God, Las Vegas now too. What are we doing? A guy named Mr. Todd gives a guy named Roger a fat stack of cash, tells him to let her know she has the job. We don't know what this means. Rogers asks him, he says, why do you let him tell you what to do? We don't know what that means yet. Mr. Todd says, never let anyone like him into your life. And we think he's referring to Mr. C. What are they talking about? We have no idea. We'll come back to that. Then we're at a diner and it's Mr. C, Daria, Ray, and a guy named Jack. And this is one of the reasons I love Ray. But what I want you to hear here is Mr. C. He clearly takes no shorts and no losses, and he's definitely not trying to take any flack from Ray. Let's learn a little bit more about what Mr. C is all about.
Jack, you barely touched your three dinners. Darius said something about you being worried about tomorrow or the day after.
No, I'm not worried, Ray, about anything.
Well, that's good.
For a while, day after tomorrow, I'll need to be on my own. That might be a good time for you to learn how to mind your own business.
Meantime, is there anything I can do to help? Just let me know.
I'll be sure to let you know, Ray.
And I'll follow up on that contact of mine. Hopefully get the information you need.
Want. Not need. I don't need anything, Ray. If there's one thing you should know about me, Ray, it's that I don't need anything. I want. And I want that information. Kind of funny that she'll only give it to you.
This information seems pretty important to you. Don't worry, I get it for you.
And I better be able to trust that information.
So Mr. C tells Ray, I don't need anything. But he wants information from William Hastings' secretary, that only Ray can seem to get. So you see how these are connected. That's where the connection to South Dakota comes from, is because Ray apparently knows William Hastings' secretary. And I want you to take note, I'll put the image on the Instagram, Mr. C is drinking coffee, of course, but he's also eating corn. He's eating creamed corn, the Garmin Bogia. Isn't that interesting? Now, the log lady calls Hawk. Hawk's out in the woods with his flashlight. Again, season one, season two references. And he's headed to the Ring of Sycamore Trees, a.k.a. the Glastonbury Grove. And we, you know, I love it. We get a little taste of that season one music, and I'm like, yes. Because Angelo Baldamenti actually did the score for season three as well. But, you know, the iconic season one and season two music, give me it all day, right in my veins. But she says to him, the stars turn and time presents itself, which is the title of the show, must be important. And what we're talking about here is the opening up of the Glastonbury Grove to the Red Room with the conjunction of Saturn and Jupiter, like we talked about with season two. Take a listen.
Margaret?
Hawk, where are you walking tonight?
Once again, your log and I are on the same page. Supposed to be something happening here tonight.
The stars turn, and a time presents itself. Hawk. Watch carefully.
I will, Margaret.
I'm too weak to go with you. But stop by. I have coffee and pie for you.
I'm gonna have to be after. I'm almost there now.
Please, let me know what happens.
I will, Margaret. Good night, Margaret.
So, of course, we're recalling back to the symbolism of Saturn, the idea of time and space as a construct brought forth from the planetary force of Saturn. And we know Saturn is the cube we saw in New York City that manifested evil itself. But anyways, Hawk is out at Glastonbury Grove, and you can actually see the Red Room beginning to manifest around it. The stars are aligning, meaning the astrological alignment of Saturn and Jupiter in conjunction must be happening again. The Black Lodge is going to open again. And boom, just like that, we're now in the waiting room, back in the Red Room. And Mike, the one armor, who's 25 years older now, asks Cooper, who's 25 years older now. He says, is it future or is it past? And then he says, someone is here. And I don't know if he's referring to Hawk, because Hawk is actually right outside of the Red Room, you know, right? Because he's at Glastonbury Grove and the Red Room curtains are showing up because it's the conjunction. Or maybe he's talking about Laura, because Laura also shows up and she is 25 years older as well. And listen to their dialogue.
Is it future or is it ask. Someone is here.
Hello, and guest Bluebell. You can go out now. Do you recognize me?
Are you Laura Palmer?
Yeah, I feel it. Yeah, I know her. But sometimes me arms bend back.
Who are you?
I am Laura Palmer.
But Laura Palmer is dead.
I am dead. Yes, I am.
She says, hello, Agent Cooper, and he asks her if she's Laura Palmer. She says, I feel like I know her, but sometimes my arm's been back. Again, season one dream, the dream, right, that connected these two. And she says, I am Laura Palmer, and Cooper says, Laura Palmer is dead. And she says, I am dead, yet I live. Now, this is a very curious choice of words. This is a play on the occult concept of the dying and resurrecting God of Osiris, or Christ. This is the idea of the one, the anomaly. And it's interesting, she says the same stuff that she said 25 years ago, sometimes my arms bend back, which we now think came from Fire Walk With Me, the scene of her death where her arms were tied behind her, all right? And in the red room here, she pops her face off and shows white light. And it's kind of blinding almost to Cooper. What does this indicate? Does this indicate that she actually is God? She is the source. She's an agent of the White Lodge. I don't know. And what I want you to also notice is, I'll put the image up on the Instagram, she's wearing a brooch pin that has gold and emerald green, like jade green, which, if you recall, that's what is on the ring. Is it related? I don't know. Cooper asks her when he can go. She leans in, she kisses him, and whispers in his ear. And after this, a force pulls her upwards and she screams, "Where did she go?" Now, this is odd because the actual subtitles, not the, you know, when they speak in reverse, the Lodge subtitles show up, but the actual subtitles for the film or the show, it just says that she says the word whisper. Like, she says the word whisper out loud. And you can hear it. She says it out loud. Why does she say that? And then she actually whispers inaudibly, of course, and Cooper groans. Like, he's wincing. Like, he's not loving what he's hearing. Like, she sends him a message and he's not, he's like, whoa, what? And the curtains separate. We see the white horse again, just like we saw in the past. And recall that we talked about this in the season one and season two. Sarah Palmer always saw that white horse. And in the Log Lady intros, the pale horse was part of the apocalypse. And I was talking to you guys, I don't even know which episode, where John Dee was doing the rituals with Edward Kelly, and they got the vision of the man on the white horse with a fiery spear. And they thought it was perhaps the first horseman of the apocalypse, a.k.a. the Antichrist. And then the Whore of Babylon appears and says, "I am the daughter of fortitude." And I think all of those are connected in with this idea of the Whore of Babylon manifesting. So Mike takes Cooper to a room and points to this like tree with a brain on it, brain on top, and he calls it the evolution of the arm. And the evolution of the arm speaks to Cooper and tells him, "And I sound like this." And he does a sort of play on what the man from another place, the little man who was going in the fire walk with me, he does a sort of version of that, but as a brain would, like a... And the arm asks Cooper if he remembers the doppelganger. And they flash back to the end of season two with Cooper's doppelganger chasing him. And the arm says, "The doppelganger has to come back in before you can go back out." And this all feels very coordinated, right? It feels like a trigger, a sequence has been initiated. The fact that Laura told Cooper something important before she disappeared, and now Mike and the arm tell him how he can leave. And Laura also told him he can leave. It's like they're saying, okay, things are ready. We need you to go now. And the fact that she is the "I am dead yet I live," she is the Osiris, the resurrecting god. So which is it? Can he leave or can he not leave? Or is this a test? I mean, there's lots of tests in the Red Room. And previously we talked about the Book of Revelation from Fire Walk With Me, the missing pieces, when Major Briggs was reading it to his wife. And we also talked about the Whore of Babylon theories regarding Laura Palmer. At the post-season two wrap-up analysis where I told you what I thought was going on in Twin Peaks as per season one and two. Now, notice what Laura said. "I am dead, yet I live." She is the resurrection story. She is the one to save humanity. She is supposed to be the Christ-like figure. Kind of like Neo in the Matrix, right? And if you go to John 11:21 from the Orthodox Study Bible, it says this. It says, "Now Martha said to Jesus, 'Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give you.' Jesus said to her, 'Your brother will rise again.' Martha said to him, 'I know that he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day.' Jesus said to her, 'I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live.'" So is it saying that Laura is God, or is it saying that Laura believes in Christ, believes in the power of good, believes in the White Lodge, the power of love? And if you go to the interpretation, it says that while Martha possesses great faith, her statements indicate a lack of understanding about Christ. In saying, "If you had been here, my brother would not have died," Martha reveals she does not fully see that Christ is God, thinking he needed to present to effect healings. By saying, "Whatever you ask of God, God will give you," she shows her lack of understanding that Christ possesses full divine authority to act as he wills. Then it says, I am the resurrection and the life. To correct Martha's misunderstanding, Christ declares his divine authority to raise the dead at the last day, as well as here in this world. So, we're talking about resurrecting the dead. We're talking about the power of Christ making anything possible. All right? So, is Laura dead? She says, "I am dead, yet I live." But maybe through the powers of the White Lodge, she can be resurrected in some way. I don't know. I'm not sure where... you could interpret this thing a million ways. So next, we're taken to Mr. C. Again, it's a clear depiction showing us that Mr. C is the doppelganger of Cooper. He's evil Cooper, if we didn't realize it yet. And he's got Jack hiding his car in storage. He plays with Jack's face and mouth, like grabbing on it. Why? No idea. Mr. C gets a new car and he heads to his motel room. And he opens the door and Daria is in there acting mad shady. She's on the phone and she immediately hangs up. And Mr. C knows this. Turns out he was monitoring Daria's phone. She had gotten a call from Ray, who's now in jail. And Ray says Jeffries called him and said that she has to basically kill Mr. C. Are we talking about Philip Jeffries? That's interesting, right? Well, Mr. C don't like none of this. He kills Daria. He's like, "No, you're done." So, Mr. C asked Daria who was trying to kill him, and she denies knowing anything. All she admits is that Ray and Daria were going to split $500,000 if they killed him from this guy Jeffries. And during the conversation, Daria asks Mr. C, but this is before he kills her, obviously. Before he kills her, Daria asks him what he meant about how he was going to be pulled away tomorrow. And he tells us that he was supposed to get pulled back into the Black Lodge. Take a listen.
"But he said you were going away somewhere tomorrow."
"Tomorrow? I'm supposed to get pulled back into what they call the Black Lodge. But I'm not going back there. I've got a plan for that one. But this prison thing with that fucker Ray. Daria, did Ray get that information from Hastings' secretary? Did he ever mention coordinates to you?"
"I don't know what that is."
"Geographical coordinates, numbers, letters. It could save your life."
"He said she told him something, but I don't know what."
"Anybody ever show this to you before?" "Do you know what this is?" "Did you ever see anything like this?" "This is what I want."
And he drops another iconic line about that fucker Ray. Apparently, the problem is that there's some geographic coordinates Ray was supposed to get from Hastings' secretary. And we heard about that at the diner. Mr. C is pissed off that he's in prison when he's supposed to be getting these coordinates handled. What's he going to do? Well, on that clip, he showed Daria this Ace of Spades card that has this, it looks like a dog face or something, like a big circle with two ears, kind of. And he asked if she's ever seen anything like it. And she says, "No." And he says, "This is what I want." And it looks a lot like that Black Lodge symbol from the Owl Cave. Not identical, but very similar. And this is one of the main plot lines of season 3. He's looking for the coordinates to make contact with this black figure on the Ace of Spades card. So like I said, he shoots Daria in the head. Very gory. You see the smoke. It's crazy. And then he opens this briefcase. And this device he uses to speak to a guy named Philip. Take a listen.
Philip?
You're late.
Couldn't be helped.
I missed you in New York, but I see you're still in Buckhorn.
And you're still nowhere, is that correct?
You met with Major Garland Briggs.
How did you know that? Philip?
Actually, I just called to say goodbye.
This is Philip Jeffries, right?
You are going back in tomorrow, and I will be with Bob again.
Who is this?
So we hear that Philip is nowhere and confirms that Mr. C had met with Major Garland Briggs. And Philip says he just called to say goodbye. Mr. C asks if this is Philip Jeffries. And Philip instructs Mr. C that he will be going back to the Black Lodge tomorrow. And he'll, meaning Philip is going to be with Bob again. So I'm hella confused. I'm like, wait a minute, why would Philip Jeffries be with Bob? It sounds like Mr. C had met with Major Briggs. I mean, there's a lot of mysteries here. But apparently Philip Jeffries is still a part of this whole universe, right? And of course, David Bowie's dead as of the filming of this. And Philip Jeffries is facilitating Mr. C being forced back into the Black Lodge, presumably to release Cooper from the Black Lodge. But why or how is Philip going to be with Bob again? Is Bob going into the Black Lodge? Because remember, Bob is in the body of Mr. C. Also, recall from season 2, Wyndham Earl was using that briefcase for surveillance. Do you remember this? And it makes me wonder if Mr. C got this briefcase from Wyndham Earl in the Black Lodge. So, a lot of confusion here, right? But Mr. C, he opens up this briefcase and there's an FBI database he has access to. And he gets on the Maps app to find the federal prison in South Dakota. Downloads a bunch of information about this prison where Ray is being held. And apparently he's going to go to Ray to try to get these coordinates. Damn it, Ray. So he does all this. Then he goes next room to room 7. And made me think of what the giant said. The giant said, remember, 430. I don't know. Is it important? Not at all, it turns out. But he talks to a woman named Chantel. This is actually played by Jennifer Jason Leigh. And he orders her to clean up room 6 where he just killed Daria. Then they start fooling around. Now we're back in the waiting room. The arm tells Cooper, 253, time and time again, Bob, Bob, Bob. And that he needs to go now. And you're sitting here and you're watching, you're like, I thought you just said that Mr. C or Evil Cooper needs to come back in the lodge first, the doppelganger. But then you start realizing the timelines maybe are connected so that this is going to happen at the same time. So Cooper goes into the hallway, sees Leland Palmer, who asks him to find Laura. Like, he's just been trapped in here this whole time. And then things start going a little, the room starts disrupting. You actually hear the phonograph sound that the giant presented at the beginning of episode 1. Mike says something's wrong. The arm says, my doppelganger. Cooper finds an exit out of the red room. The curtain opens up. There's the freeway. And sure enough, Mr. C is driving towards the red room on this freeway. And the arm screams non-existent and kicks Cooper out. But where does he go? He falls through the stars and manifests into this glass box, the glass cube in New York City. And what's really weird, just to sort of prove that we're on different timelines or they're showing us stuff out of sequence, it shows us Tracy showing up with the lattes, meaning that's what we're seeing now actually happened earlier in episode 1, before they were killed by the experiment. All right? And this suggests that Cooper was in the glass box right before the experiment. Or perhaps he was the experiment. Or this is some new timeline. Cooper got sent back in time. We're not sure. But either way, Cooper manifests in the glass box. Then he gets sort of like condensed in this weird way and then kicked back out of the cube and sent back into space. Now, my interpretation, I think Cooper was kicked out of the Black Lodge, the Red Room, the Waiting Room, whatever you want to call it, goes into the cube, and the experiment is chasing Cooper, maybe. And the experiment shows up after Cooper. Maybe? I don't know. Nonetheless, we're close to the end of the episode, and now we're back in Twin Peaks. Thank God. 708 33rd Street at the Laura Palmer residence. And, of course, Laura's not there. And, of course, Leland's not there. They're dead. But Sarah is still there. And Sarah is drinking and smoking. And the room looks crazy. It's in disarray. She's sitting there getting all, I don't know, tooted up. And she's watching lions killing prey on a loop on TV. Like, just chilling. It's nighttime. It's really dark. And what's interesting is when I went to visit the Palmer residence, Mary Reber, who gave me the tour, who owns the home, who plays Alice Tremond, she told me, she said, notice on that scene how the TV is in front of the fireplace, which I didn't actually pick up on. Meaning there's a, you know, when you watch it in season one and two, there's a fireplace there. But she put a TV in front of the fireplace. That's how demented this chick is. It's very disturbing. Her state of mind is way off. She looks terrible. Something's wrong with Sarah Palmer. Something's terribly wrong with her. All right. Then we go over to the roadhouse. Oh, thank God. Go to the roadhouse. It's packed. Everyone from Twin Peaks is there, apparently. And, you know, we get to see what's up with Shelley. She's hanging out with her girlfriends. We see James. He's hanging out with the bros. They're smiling. They're hanging out. And Shelley and her friends notice James over there. And Shelley tells her friends, like, hey, James was in a motorcycle accident. He's just quiet now, but he's cool. He's always been cool. And it's true, man. James has always been cool. probably the most controversial thing in all of Twin Peaks, because everybody hates James. In fact, I didn't like James either the first time I watched Twin Peaks. But watching it again, I'm like, you know what? James is all right. Why do we all hate James so much? He seems like a nice guy. And if you look, you see Jacques Renault's identical brother bartending. His brother, well, the Renaults are still alive and strong in Twin Peaks. And the show wraps up the chromatic. Every episode, just about every episode, ends at the Roadhouse with a band performing. Okay? And this band is the Chromatics, and they're playing a song called Shadow, obviously referencing the doppelgangers or the shadows of Twin Peaks. And the lyrics are all about, you know, the shadow taking me down for the last time. It's actually a really dark, it's really dark lyrics, honestly, about the shadow taking me down. Because that's what we saw was the battle of the shadow with Cooper, you know, and the evil Cooper. And that's it for episode two. So now we're already two episodes in. And I need you to watch season 3, episode 3. Things are going to get really weird in episode 3. And there's some connections here to Kenneth Grant's Mauve Zone. There's a lot of really magical inferences you could make from episode 3. And you got to hang in there for season 3. You really got to hang in there because there's tons of characters. There's tons of stuff going on. Not all of it's important, but we're going to have a good time and we're going to learn a lot in the process. Okay? It's going to be worth it in the end, I assure you. So thank you for supporting the show. Thank you for listening to me. Thanks for being in the Grey Lodge with me. Until next time, stay positive.